You need to make it closer.
I think that would be enough, let's hope so. Good evening and happy new year.
Happy new year.
You made it.
Another year.
That's right. Happy to begin it with you. And we're going to give it the old college try tonight and endeavor to do 5 months of this.
Let's do it.
Wow, how about that? It is my pleasure to be able to present to you a new topic every week. I don't repeat unless there's a demand for repetition, but it's a opportunity that I have to answer questions of my own. And we are here in Wednesday Salon to rediscover the principles of our country. And to gather together as fellow Americans who owe it to ourselves to understand the history of our own country. And somewhere we have been denied the origin and purpose of this country and where it belongs in the history of all mankind, all of mankind. And so this is why we're here. And the idea of truth or discovering the history of our nation is somewhat like coming upon something like mining for gold. It's always been there, but hidden. And we have to do some digging. And to dig means to go back to search and know for ourselves, not what we have been necessarily given to know, but to know something is to know it for yourself. And that's why we want to investigate certain events, certain periods of our nation so that we can know for ourselves. At least I lay before you ideas to think about. Think in terms also of the fact that in the material world, there are laws that had to be discovered, such as the law of gravity, the principle of it, the mathematics of it, the law of it, the behavior of the law of gravity. And that's in the material world. And I want to submit to you that in the unseen world, the political world, there are also laws that mankind had to discover in his progress, in his learning from past to the present day. And we are learning as mankind to find what those laws that are pre-existing to us. They've always been there, like the gold in the soil, in the ground. They've always been there operating before we ever came upon the scene. And so there are things that pre-exist to man. And we want to know how to live our lives according to law. Not of our own making, but they have pre-existed mankind. And we are not the invention of ourselves. All right? We didn't create ourselves at all. We came from an idea. And there is a law that belongs to mankind. And we want to discover them so that we can know properly how to live this phenomena called life. Life. So the Emancipation Proclamation, titled A Necessary Military Measure, seems rather mundane, and yet in it there is some gold to have. There's some gold for us to possess, and it is related to our own country, an event in our nation, and it teaches us something. The more we understand what is error, it only affirms the truth. Do you not understand that? That there is a purpose in doing it wrong, is to discover what is right.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Even the bad idea helps us to know what a good idea is.
That's right.
How many inventions fail before they are actually working? And so, you know, by the time the Emancipation Proclamation came out, we were only 87 years old from the time of our Declaration of Independence. An infant nation. And we're the first of our own kind, the first nation that's built on the concept of self-government. No other nation was built on that one idea, the government of one, of the individual. And so I want to make these presuppositions with you, that first page, and see what this Emancipation Proclamation has taught us. Some of us were taught erroneously about this proclamation. Some of us were taught that this proclamation freed all the slaves, that it ended slavery, or was the beginning of the end of slavery in this country, specifically of the Black American. This is fallacious. It freed no one. All right. It let them free, but it freed no one. Make sense to you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And today, we think about freedom, and we learn from this, that it freed no one. And to our harm as a nation, and I think to some degree, a great harm to the slave. And it doesn't matter what color he is at all. And so let's examine closely what we are to dig out from this and how we can repair the damage. But we were already in a civil war. All right, this was a part of the civil war. That is, we were fighting among ourselves, white with white, okay? Okay, brother with brother. We're already in a very violent situation within ourselves. There would not have been, so let's look at the Civil War as a whole. We would not have had an American Civil War unless America had already, 30 years before this, ideas take about 30 years to bear fruit, okay? So if you have a good idea today, wait 30 years before you see the result of that. Absolutely.
You mean like children?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Very good, Sarah.
From the moment of the twinkle of that eye, 30 years later, that's what you have, okay?
That was good.
And that's exactly right. A generation and a half. 1830s is where we began to see the Civil War begin to foment. What ideas grew this into a civil war? So it was when America as a whole let go of the principles, the ideas of representative government, and we have yet to rediscover those principles. We let those principles go. We haven't got a clue what that means. We don't understand exactly what was originated in 1776 to 1787. But we let go of the principles of what the founding fathers said were our principles, representative government. For what? We let them go for other principles. And that's what we have today. We became a democratic republic. Like Athens endeavored to be. We let go of what? Exercising the powers of local self-government. That is California taking care of California. Los Angeles County taking care of Los Angeles County. San Francisco County taking care of San Francisco County. Alameda County taking care of Alameda County. And within those counties, the cities taking care of themselves. And within those cities, the neighborhoods taking care of their own neighborhood. And within those neighborhoods, the families taking care of their own families. And that's the seed of our nation, is the family, and then the city, and then the county, and then the state, and perhaps there's something left over for the nation to take care of. But now everything has relegated to nationalizing everything, which is the Democratic Republic. Let go of exercising the powers of local self-government for what? Gaining the prize of national power. We are a power struggle today between parties, mm-hmm. Right? That's democracy, where majority, not the local sphere, but the majority party or the majority are fighting for control of the whole nation. The prize of winning and competing for national power and the competition between political factions. This is exactly what we're experiencing today, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Let go of political principles for what? Now, political principles means there are principles that are proper for policy making. for the policy of men in nations, states, and cities, and towns that are political, purely of the civil sphere. Let go of political principles like the law of gravity, okay, for arbitrary collective will of the majority of society. Let's let go of principles and go the way of the majority instead. What we let go is this, that instead of referring to something called divine revelation, reason referring to and guided by divine revelation was let go for reason guided by self-revelation and self-realization. That's your Bostonian New England philosophy. But we let go of something called guidance by divine revelation for self-revelation. Whatever I come to, whatever is born in me as light, and self-realization, what I come to understand and is what we're going to be guided by. We let go of self-government for self-reliance. There's a difference between self-government and self-reliance. And these, and local self-government was let go for nationalization of all local matters. Okay, that's democratic. Democratically decided, not locally decided. Federally decided, but not personally decided. Individual liberty of conscience was let go for a social conscience. Let the group decide what's right and wrong. And the collective sharing of guilt. I like this one. All right? Let's share the guilt. Like, let's share the wealth. We share everything. And behind the idea of abolition was the idea of the North assuming the guilt, all right, of the nation, this sharing of guilt. And we'll see where that goes. We'll see where that goes. Instead of individual liberty of conscience, there was the idea of collecting, sharing of guilt. The idea that civil government is using its power specifically instead of for just merely for the protection of individual life, liberty, and property. This is let go for the idea that civil government is using its power specifically for the enforcement of a democratic social good and morality. So civil government is not here to enforce morality. That is not the proper role of civil government whatsoever. And there's nothing more moral than I believe what we call the legislatures today, this idea of enforcing moral social good, and it's a misapplication of power. So this is where we were in 1830 to 1860. This is really what aggravated and brought a clashing of parties, North and Southern at that point in time. And let's look at our executive here, Lincoln, President Lincoln. And from beginning to end, Lincoln's concern, again, he's presiding over the states, was for the preservation of the nation and the Constitution, its body of laws. The Constitution is our infrastructure. It's our political infrastructure. It's our roads, our highways. It's our restraint. It's what we travel on as a country, politically. And his concern was to preserve that body of law and the states as one. So the Civil War between the North and South was fought by the North to prevent the secession of the Southern states and save the Union. It was about secession. How many times were we taught that the Civil War was about slavery? It was about secession, not about slavery whatsoever. Lincoln gave the citizens in rebellion, those that were in rebellion. Now, what is rebellion? It's when you rise up against what is lawful authority. And lawful authority is the law of the land, which is the Constitution of the United States of America. And the South rebelled against the Constitution. And so gave them as much protection of the Constitution as he possibly could have, because as far as he was concerned, they were part of the Union. They may have seceded in their minds, but not in Lincoln's mind, because he was still applying the Constitution to the whole. They were simply states in rebellion. like a rebellious child, right, of a family, yes.
Do you think that people think that the Civil War is about slavery because of the fact that the Southern states wished to secede based on the fact that they were getting so much grief for, in fact, war slavery?
They used slavery as a reason for secession, but the point was secession was rebellion.
Why did they choose to rebel?
Because the provocation and interference of the North into a local matter. Absolutely.
So it was a federal interference into a local matter that caused to rebel in the first place.
That's right.
But the local matter was slavery?
The local matter was slavery.
At the same time, the
Congress was compromising about slavery, so you can't say that because they let slavery go into the territories, the new territories. Missouri Compromise, the 1850 Compromise, and they were bargaining, so you can't say it was all altruistic, it was political. The South insisted on pushing slavery outside of the South into the new states.
And they wanted to stop it.
So both are wrong, and both are correct.
Let's not forget the North also had slaves, too.
They had children.
And indeed, it had already been established by the Supreme Court that it was legal.
It did, but the point was that each state was to manage that affair within
its own boundaries.
Yes, just as today, the marriage, all the things that we're dealing with today is the same idea, isn't it not? Mm-hmm. These are local matters. And if we look at what eventually happened, it's ultimately taken care of at the local level. I think I've said this before in our Wednesday salons. All the problems in our nation have been structured. We are structured in such a way that all the problems of our nation are handled locally. Locally. Mm-hmm. Morality is dealt with locally of the family first, and of religion second, not the civil. Okay? And it's not the civil to interfere in the conscience and the religion and the family government of that sphere. And it's the breakdown of that understanding of local self-government that has eroded the spheres and, again, multiplied our problems. But let me go on further here. And so Lincoln was wanting to deal with the rebellious states without aiding and abetting the rebellion. Do you see that? You know, as parents, you understand this. Your children are opposing your lawful authority. You don't want to lose them, right? You don't want to lose them. They're part of the family unit. And so how do you deal with them lawfully without losing them to the world? And this is what he had to deal with. It's not personal, it's principle. Mm-hmm. We have to think by principle, not by personal, emotional responses. And we got emotional about it all. He said, no person, again, this Fifth Amendment said you can't take away the property of another citizen without due process of law. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to take the slaves out. Now, they were bought, okay? It was regarded as part because they didn't actually buy them. And it's a shameful thing that you would buy human beings, but that was still the case. They owned them. That's what a slave is. You're owned by someone one way or another. That's just the reality of it. And to go into a place by federal power to confiscate or take the property of another state is violating the Fifth Amendment. And he wanted to use the Fifth Amendment to apply to these rebellious states and yet at the same time not to condone the rebellion, you see. Mm-hmm. And so he wasn't thinking about the issue, he was thinking about, again, what was constitutionally in his power to do. What he personally wanted to do was one thing. What he only could do as president, only as president of the United States, was another matter. Mm-hmm. And so Lincoln denied the idea that the Confederacy was a separate from the nation. You know, your children can say, I'm out of here. But in your heart, they're not out of you. Okay? That's the difference here. In Lincoln's heart, the Union was still one, and he acted as president over all of them, rebellious or not rebellious. That was proper, because he took an oath of office. And that was to maintain the Constitution over the president as presiding officer over all the states. He had to be better than the many of the senators and congressmen about him. And so unless there is a criminal act, you can't take away or confiscate another man's belongings. Lincoln denied that they were separate, and he also, though, realized that there had to be some course of pain and enforcement of punishment for the rebellion itself. And so we've never had a civil war before. We never even thought that to have one. How do we deal with ourselves when we're fighting against ourselves? But remember, he's commander-in-chief. His job as commander-in-chief over the armed forces is to maintain, again, the safety of everyone concerned and protection. Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation as an executive order as commander-in-chief, not because he was overriding what the states were to do. This was a military measure. And what he said was this, basically, Clause 1 of Article 2 of the Constitution, Section 2, the president can, as commander-in-chief, require the opinion of all, but as commander-in-chief, he is to carry out the enforcement of the Constitution. Have power, but I think the main phrase there is that he is commander-in-chief of the army, and now we're in civil war. So he's giving orders as commander-in-chief to the army, the Union Army. And so as a war power, he said that the slaves, because they are a comfort to the Southern Rebellion, they did all the labor. They did the manufacturing. They did all the things that enabled the South to go to war. As we put here, they did the work in the factories, shipping yards, mines, they built fortifications, hospital workers, and common laborers. And so if you confiscated or if you freed the slaves and you went in there, then you would undermine the rebellion. That was his point, to undermine the rebellion. Remember, it was only freeing the slaves of the rebellious states, not of those that were already in the Union. Can you understand that? All right, it did not free the states that were in the Union, only those that were rose up militarily against the Union. It was selective. It was only to undermine the strength of the army of the South. So it was not altruistic in that sense at all. And it was misrepresented as such.
Well, it did not. It also did not apply to those rebellious states which were under the control of the Union Army at that time. They were not included.
Right. Well, we'll see what was included here. I have a map to show what it really meant. And so William Seward, the Secretary of State at the same time, said, here's the irony, as he said to Lincoln. We show our sympathy with slavery by emancipating slaves where we cannot reach them. And then we hold them in bondage where we can set them free. You see?
Yes.
Right? But he had no authority as President of the United States to free any slave. There was no power in the Constitution that gave the president that authority, only as commander-in-chief when there is a rebellion.
Excuse me. It's in the Declaration of Independence that says
that's our philosophy.
All men are created equal.
Right. And we still, as a people today, have to grow up into that document.
Mankind
as a whole has to still grow up into those ideas.
Yeah.
How do we do that? We're further along than we were in 1863.
Declaration of Independence is not the Constitution.
Right.
But the Constitution comes from the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
That's why it was written the way it was written, to allow the people to grow up in the ideas in themselves without force. This is by force. This is hard to be free, all right? It's hard to let somebody else be free.
It is, isn't it?
It is. But if we can't allow him to be free, we're not allowing ourselves to be free. And that's what the Constitution does. And it has structured our nation to be governed at the local level first. No other nation is structured that way. And we have to take care of our business. And you can't escape your own business in that part. Let's go on further here. Lincoln was very anxious about the legality of his actions. That's why when he wrote this proclamation, he wanted to make sure that it was legal, mm-hmm. not moral. It was legal, because then he would be undermining mm-hmm. his authority, and he would be using unlawful authority, which is rebellion himself. Mm-hmm. Very, very important that we understand that. And so he retained the powers of both, and the court said that he was again dealing with belligerents. At the same time, he was a sovereign as the president. So he had to use both sides, but delicately and with, again, a sound decision, sound wisdom. Lincoln declared in peacetime he had no constitutionality to free the slaves. Now, as much as we know slavery is heinous, it's an awful institution, but there are many other things that are awful in mankind, too. And no president has any authority to deal with anything that is as heinous as slavery in society. That's not, civil government is limited. It is not the almighty. It's not omnipotent. It can only punish when individuals are harmed in their life, liberty, and property at the local level or the national level.
Sorry, but he was aware that it was anti-constitutional to have a slave.
In peacetime, but this was civil war. And he used his powers as commander-in-chief to issue this executive proclamation, right? As a commander-in-chief. The title of this is, it's a military measure.
Now, he said that Lincoln was aware that it was unconstitutional to have slaves.
No, it was immoral to have slaves.
That was not in the Constitution.
It's not in the Constitution to say you couldn't have slaves.
Okay.
It's
properties.
Right? Pardon?
It was property rights to have slaves.
Right. Well, it was in that form, not property rights. He, again, we'll read later that he is most anti-slavery. You know, there are things about us that we can be very, in our own personal moral decision, we can be very anti many things, can't we? But we can't impose that. I can't impose my morals on anyone else, true? Absolutely not. And so no governments have imposed morality. But not only in outward, but not in your own opinion. Okay? They can't force an opinion on you. They can force conformity, outward conformity, but no one, that's your private liberty, can force an opinion on you unless you consent to it. Go ahead. But slavery is just one of those immoral acts of all mankind.
Okay, so
you can't get rid of it all by edict.
Okay, I understand. Okay. So edicts being
declarations saying no more, you can't do it anymore.
So right. So when they were small enough at the time when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, and they stated all the men that signed it and said yes, we agree with this, that all men are created equal. When they were small enough, then they could have made.
It didn't matter how small or big you were.
Why did they continue to allow it further and on for
it? It can only be taken care of locally. Yes, and one generation after another.
They were only representatives of other people.
They agreed to that document, but mankind had never come to that understanding, and here they had inherited institutions from the old world that had to be resolved. True?
No.
How do you undo something that's 6,000 years old? You didn't start in America with slavery. I mean, it didn't start in America. Yes.
I remember reading in some of my history about that was a serious problem when they were getting people to sign the Declaration of Independence, is that a lot of the northern states wanted there to be a no slavery provision in there.
That's
and
right.
The only way they could get everybody to sign
it was
politics.
Because not only politics, what was primary and what is the appropriate way to deal with immorality in your nation? At the sphere
at the
closest to you,
yes,
right?
To educate
because it may not be a problem in your county, it may be a problem in the next county. The county that has the problem has to deal with it.
Yeah.
And where is it really resolved? In the people? Now, I know in Europe, they brag, excuse me, Europeans, that they abolished slavery way before we ever did, so-called. But you know what? They had a mental ranking system in their heads. Sure, they stopped slavery and the importation or buying of slavery, but already in their society, there was the lower, the middle, and the high. Okay, there is a ranking of humanity in their minds that nobody could see, but it was an invisible wall of saying you can't come here. So it was superficial, it's external, but not true because it didn't come from here. That's what we have to learn. How is the issue of slavery or racism? That's really at the bottom of it. Really racism. Resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let me give me a chance to go forward, we'll but all the questions are answered. I'm building, all right? Let me tell my story, and then the symbols will clash. Hopefully, the lights will go on. Since the proclamation was a war measure, it had not permanently ended slavery. The thing is, it wasn't intended to end slavery permanently. It cannot. It could not do that. New England, and this is where these highfalutin ideas, and by the way, our history books have been written by these New England abolitionists.
That's right.
Okay? And the ideas of switching from a representative republic to a democratic republic was a New England idea.
That's right.
Okay, give credit to our New England brethren, okay?
Yeah.
And their idea of...
Let's go blow up Massachusetts.
No, because the pilgrims landed there. No, we got to go back to square one. But giving up divine revelation for self-revelation was New England. Harvard. Giving up self-government for self-reliance... Emerson, okay?
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
We just got to know where it all started. And they're the ones that set up the first public school system. They're the ones that wrote the textbooks.
Yeah.
Everybody measures
and
them.
They're the ones that gave the Emancipation Proclamation and Reconstruction the spin that we have. And they're still spinning it. They're still writing the textbooks.
Right.
Princeton, Harvard,
Yale,
okay? That's the seedbed of democratic republicanism. And now, what kind of party are they having these days? Okay?
Yeah.
The fruit of that is coming forth. You just have to realize. And Lincoln was dealing with the nation as a whole while we were having civil war between what we call factions. So the New England abolitionists look very sad that the proclamation was only given account of military necessity. Well, that's too bad, because that's the proper way to do it, you see. Now, the basis of slavery is my last presupposition. Let's get at the really bottom of this. What's at the bottom of slavery of any kind? Any kind, whether it's between genders, or between races, or between all kinds of individuals. It's the dehumanization of another individual, is it not?
Yes.
And the belief in the natural inequality and the inferiority of one race of mankind to another. And it cannot be politically or legally resolved. Truly, right? It's ridiculous to think that somehow you can abolish it with ink and pen, or ink and paper. It cannot. It's like that child that you say, you can go sit in that corner because you've been naughty. And that child says, all right, I'll sit, but I'm standing up on the inside. Okay?
Yeah.
That's right. Right? And you can tell me, I have to love my brother, but,
I don't have to like him, right?
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Ending slavery was not an original goal of the war. And you know what? We can let any issue create a civil war, can't we?
Yes.
We can let any little secondary problem create division and forget our principles over an issue or not approach the problem principally, lawfully. And so the Civil War and ending slavery became somewhat confused, joined together. Emancipation is America's first attempt at forcibly liberating captives. You know this idea of going in and liberating people of other countries? We start in our own country, forcibly liberating people that were oppressed. And we still have to answer, what is the right approach to undoing oppression? First within ourselves, and this idea of Northern armies marched to the south, they began to let go. But you know what? As you're a soldier, you let go of these slaves, so-called once slaves, and they had the legal authority to do that. Where do these slaves go? What do they do? What are you going to tell them? You know what happened? They went up north. They went north. And basically, Washington, D.C., because you set me free, you're going to take care of me. Think about it. What do you tell them to do once they're set free? And that was, we want to look at what Booker T. Washington observed, right? Let me show you the calendar. You know, that's one great idea. That's what I call romantic idea of freedom. The idea that free at last, I'm free in my body. But what do I do in my freedom? You let your children go before they're ready to go from your home. What happens? They come right back home, right? Well, so let's look at the sort of key military events of the Civil War. I highlighted the idea of August 6th. We had something called a Confiscation Act, which was ambivalent because you cannot take away property from any state or any individual without due process of law. So these were weak acts, weak laws, and Lincoln was loath to execute, though they did, but the idea was that these were against the Fifth Amendment. And so July 22nd, he began to think, in that 1862, began to think about drafting a proclamation, and he put it before his cabinet, and he had first draft. He had a preliminary printing, and the final printing and proclamation was January 1st. I thought it was appropriate for us to begin the new year with the Emancipation Proclamation, since it was in January 1863 that it came out. He gave them warnings. In September 22nd, he gave the South a warning. So after 100, you've got 100 days. And within those 100 days, if you turn your allegiance back to the Union, you will not suffer this loss. Of course, none of the southern states in rebellion heeded, and so he proclaimed, made this proclamation. But it was a war measure. It was to end the war. You know, war is miserable, war is awful, war is brutal, war is bloody, war is chaotic, war is avoided at all costs. And once you're engaged, end it as quickly as possible. And he wanted to end it. And how could he end it except to take away the machinery, the physical machinery that kept the war going in the South? The Southern armies in general were magnificent soldiers. They were wonderful, well-trained, disciplined soldiers. But they needed that support, that material support of the slaves. And so he took away the support they needed to fight a successful war. And remember, we did the Gettysburg Address. That came, Gettysburg War came in July of that year, but preceding this was again the Emancipation Proclamation. And April 4th, which I want to look at later with you, is he explains his reasons for the Emancipation Proclamation. If you want to know your history, use primary sources. Go to the author. Go to the persons in the actual events. And so I'm just going to quickly go over the fact that why this Confiscation Act of Congress. Congress issued the law of confiscation both in 1861 and 1862. 1861 was too vague, and it basically undid previous decisions about returning slaves that were escaping, and Lincoln began to not allow that to happen since they were again in battle, in war. And so this was sort of the beginning of the idea of a necessity in military, the military powers he used to undo past acts of Congress for the sake of saving the Union itself. That was uppermost in his mind. And he wanted to compensate slave owners who freed their slaves. That's, you know, that was proper. This was him treating the rebellious states with some respect as part of the union. And he wanted to compensate them with monetary compensation. And of course, he also wanted to say that the emancipation would be withdrawn from any state that would return to the union. Do you see that? He wanted to use it as a measure of union, not disunion. And so this is the package. And notice on the second confiscation, as things got very specific, was the duty of the President of the United States to cause the seizure of all the estate and property, money, stocks, credits, and effects. This was very uncomfortable, but it wasn't just slaves. It was confiscate everything, their whole property, loss of everything to them. And later on, they wanted to be temporary, that all this would be returned to them at the end of the war. That's what Lincoln desired, and of course, did not happen. And of course, in section 9 of that Confiscation Act included the slaves as well. So it was more detailed, the second Confiscation Act. And more of the same, we find here how this carried on after Lincoln passed on. He was, as you know, assassinated, and it was left for President Johnson and his administration to fulfill these. And just a little more specific things, on the bottom paragraph of the Second Confiscation Act, where it says Lincoln's limited emancipation gesture applied only to states of open rebellion. The same act granting freedom to Confederate slaves guaranteed the return of fugitives from the border states to any owner who could prove loyalty to the Union. Again, his first and foremost intent was to restore the nation as a whole. Remember, to destroy the Union meant that we would live side by side as enemies, as foreign enemies. And every issue had to be resolved as foreigners between one another by treaty or by war, which was the custom in the world. And the geography of this nation would make war a continuum. Do you see that? Continue it. And this would be the destruction of the whole idea of self-government, the whole idea of the Constitution of the United States, and we would be another Europe. And so he also goes, Lincoln could not risk alienating these states, those who were loyal to the Union. And gradual compensated emancipation would draw Virginia and Tennessee back into the Union. Lincoln was all about being gradual about change and not being abrupt and not being basically impulsive with any decision, not emotional nor provoking anything. I want us to look at the first draft that he wrote. This is what he handwrote. Of course, we don't have typewriters then or anything, so he handwrote this. It's his language. And in the second paragraph, he tells the purpose. And I hereby make known that it is my purpose upon the next meeting, to recommend the adoption of a practical measure for tendering monetary aid to the free choice or rejection of any and all states, which may then be recognizing and practicing the authority of the United States. It's to bring, again, what would be a measure to practically bring back the states back together, that gradual abolishment of slavery with such states or states. He was interested in actually stopping slavery from increasing. He ran on the platform that slavery ought not to be advanced beyond the states that where it existed. It would not go into the territories. It would not be the basis, or it would not be furthered in this nation. And that was he was very strong on that, and that was proper, not to advance it. And so the gradual undoing of slavery, first in our nation, and then hopefully locally, dealing with it locally, but he would not have it progress or be carried out as part of the policy of this nation as it grew. And he said here that thenceforward and to be maintained the constitutional relation between the general government and each and all the states. Let's keep the proper relationship between state and the nation, that it no longer be suspended or disturbed. How to bring that back? How to have a practical measure? For this object, the war, as it has been, will be prosecuted. This is why we're at war. Not over slavery, but over the fact that we need to have a proper relation between the Congress or between the nation and the states. And today we still have the same problem. What is our proper relationship with the nation and with ourselves? And keep our local affairs to ourselves, and let's learn as a people how to manage our own problems within our own sphere. Let's take care of slavery in our own counties, or take care of the immorality that is personal and that is familiar and that is doable within our work, that we can address what we are responsible for. But there's no shared guilt. There is no sharing of guilt, locally or nationally. That's a socialistic idea where everything is shared. And there's no personal property of any kind, personal ownership or personal entity. We're part of a sort of blob, okay? We're all moving together as a mass of some amoeba, okay? We don't have a brain. It's in Washington, okay? All right, our brain, I guess the nucleus is in Washington, and all of us are part of the protoplasm, and all the stuff that's inside, okay?
God
help us. Yes, that's basically how they view us. They're the brain, right? They're the central, the nucleus, and they send out all that needs to be done for the blob. So, for this object of war, as it has been, will be prosecuted as a fit and necessary military measure for effecting this object. And so if I'm going to emancipate these slaves in these states, it's for a military object. Let's not forget that. All persons held as slaves within any state or states wherein the constitutional authority of the United States shall not then be practically recognized, that is, those not recognizing our authority in the Constitution, shall then thenceforward and forever be free. And he changes that a little bit. And so he said in September 1862, this was released, and unless the rebellious states returned to the Union, he would emancipate their slaves. And of course, none of the Southerners blinked at that, and so he presented the Emancipation Proclamation. This is the whole proclamation on one page. Congratulate me for getting it on one page. Okay? That's the 11th point, okay? I got it all on there, but I want you to know the whole thing. And in this final draft, he lists the counties and the ones in rebellion, okay? So if you're from any one of these states, okay, there you are. But he does that. He lists them all, the counties, and some were exception, okay? If you look at the map, the next map next to it, you'll see what I mean here. The charcoal were slave states, and they were not touched by this because they were loyal to the Union, okay? And it's the gray ones that where the proclamation only applied, okay? And notice what happens. How effective was the proclamation? On that sidebar, I call it, or the side paragraph, slaves in the border states of Maryland and Missouri, you can see Maryland, Missouri, which was named as a rebellious state, they actually emancipated their slaves by a separate state action. They did it themselves. And that's when it's most effective, when the states themselves emancipate, because they, the people, decided for themselves about themselves. It didn't come from the president, it came from themselves. And that is a pattern. That's really what works. The Emancipation Proclamation really freed nobody. It freed no one. It was just a proclamation. The people had to grapple with it themselves and make a decision. In early 1865, Tennessee adopted an amendment to its constitution, its own state constitution, prohibiting slavery. Isn't that, you know, we're talking about the North. The North began ceasing slavery in their own states early in the 1790s, on their own. And of course, they didn't rely on plantation living like the South. And of course, it was more easily and readily done. The South would take more time. And the South had a responsibility. It did not assume that responsibility. And it, again, we can see the results of it. Nevertheless, it was taken care of locally and in the state, not federally. Eventually be taken care of. And so again, it's all about the Union and how we take care of our problems. How does America take care of its problems? Centrally or locally?
When did the District of Columbia eliminate slavery?
I beg your pardon?
When did the District of Columbia eliminate slavery?
That's a good point. I can't tell you that. I know that all the slaves went to Washington, D.C. Okay. They camped out of, you know what? Some of them camped on the White House lawn just about because they were freed by them. They figured that's where we're going to get our care. And that's where the Freedmen's Bureau was erected. And that's Reconstruction. Next week will be Reconstruction. I call it Reconstruction Fiasco. We are still experiencing, it didn't reconstruct anything. It's called a cheap remodel. Okay? And so, I want us to look at why Lincoln himself explained in a letter that he wrote. Somebody asked him, and it was wonderful that they asked him, because here in his letter, he explains his reason for the emancipation. He says, I am naturally anti-slavery. I mentioned to you when I did the marriage amendment proposal how sometimes we can be against something and yet really be for something else. Because it's the principle, right? Not the morality or immorality of a thing. It's the approach. It's the principle involved. And those of us who may or may not have voted for against Prop 9,
eight,
may have appeared that we were for something we're really not for. And because he was emancipating these slaves, or not emancipating all slaves, didn't mean he was not anti-slavery. Do you understand? What a conflict we have sometimes. I am naturally anti-slavery. If slavery is not wrong, nothing is wrong. I agree with that. I cannot remember where I did not think, nor when I did not so think and feel, and yet I have never understood that the presidency conferred upon me an unrestricted right to act officially upon this judgment and feeling. It was an oath I took that I would, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, nothing more than that. I'm not God, in other words. I could not take the office without taking the oath. Nor was it my view that I might take an oath to get power and break the oath in using the power. You see, that sound familiar?
Yes.
Sound familiar?
Yes.
I understood, too, that in ordinary civil administration, this oath forever forbear me to practically indulge my primary abstract, his opinion. I'm not to impose my opinion, one way or another, or even religion, upon this nation. Or on the moral question of slavery. I have publicly declared this many times and in many ways. I aver that to this day I have done no official act in mere deference to my opinion and feeling on slavery. All right. I have not indulged my own opinion. He doesn't have that authority. It doesn't belong to him. Otherwise, he's a dictator. You want to make him a dictator? We would not. We're dictated by our own conscience.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Our dictator.
Yeah,
right. All right? The conscience you live with. The judge you are to yourself. You're your own judge. Nobody judges you. No one's equipped to judge you. Are you? No. I did understand how my oath to preserve the Constitution to the best of my ability imposed upon me the duty of preserving by every indispensable means that government, that nation of which that constitution was the organic law. See? I felt that measures otherwise so unconstitutional might become lawful by becoming indispensable to the preservation of the Constitution through the preservation of the nation. You know, if we don't preserve this nation, none of us can exist. It's for life. You know, our nation is held by two laws, just two laws. It's based on two laws that are irrevocable, laws that pre-existed us, the law of nature and the law of nations. And the law of nature is simply this, preserve life. The law of nations is simply this, preserve independence. That's all we're built on, those two laws. The Constitution is built on those two laws, and it came from the Declaration of Independence. You'll find the laws of nature and the law of nations in the Declaration of Independence. And that's what governs this nation. No other country, no other nations built their institution on those two laws. We simply discovered it, politically discovered it, by experimentation for 150 years. we discovered that's true. Aha! It's like the light bulb. It's like Edison finding electricity or making that light bulb. We found the Constitution. It was there all along. All the raw materials were there, and all the past mistakes of history were there for us to say, aha, this is it. This is the law of gravity concerning nations. And we can work with this now. When early in the war, and of course we go, I did not yet think that it was indispensable. He did not come to this decision until it became an indispensable necessity. He was back to the wall. He had to end this conflict. And that is the role of the executive, isn't it not? Mm-hmm. When you do all you can, and it has to be indispensable, that urgent. He was driven to the alternative of either surrendering the Union, give it up, and with it the Constitution, or of laying strong hand upon, I couldn't read the word, it was in handwriting, the blank element. I chose the latter. I chose, in other words, to preserve the Constitution and not give it up. Boy, that takes character, doesn't it? This was not a popular decision. Especially up north. The north wanted to cream the south, and eventually they got their hands on the south and butchered the south, nearly destroyed the south after the war in peacetime, politically so. And what happened? He gained 130,000 more soldiers in the north because of the Emancipation Proclamation. That meant black men joined the armed forces. All right. When the slaves were released, many of them joined the cause of the Union. And so I think in all of the war, 200,000 black soldiers enlisted with Lincoln in that. And so it increased. And as far as Lincoln was concerned, that was a sign of the positive product of that. He says, events have controlled me. He was driven to this. See, that was not his first choice, but he was driven to that. This was indispensable. This was necessary. When he's as commander-in-chief, this was necessary. A hard decision. So conclusions are these. As I said earlier, the Emancipation Proclamation is America's first attempt at forcibly liberating captives and slaves. And we've run into problems with that, haven't we?
Yeah.
Liberating others, okay? By force, but it's by force. And you know, you hear a cry for force. Make it happen. We've got to agitate for force and force of law. And so freedom, it promised, depended upon military victory. And this kind of liberation involves military victory. After January 1st, every advance of federal troops expanded the domain of freedoms. The domain of freedom, just the territory of freedom, okay? Yeah, the geography of freedom. But is that truly freedom? Freedom is of the individual, not of geography, okay? It's not of geography. Assuring the slave only what? Freedom of his body. Today, we think of freedom as only freedom of the body, right? I can do, it's my body. I can do anything I please. I am not attached to any chain or ball, or I'm not in prison. That's real freedom. We learned something here. Although the proclamation made clear that it did not set the slaves free, the romantic notions of freedom the New England abolitionists have mistakenly characterized and misrepresented the purpose for America's Civil War as the freeing of the slaves rather than preserving the Constitution. You know, a romantic means fictional, okay? And they were of the romantic or fictional idea that if men were set free bodily, that they would somehow, some magical thing would happen, and they would rise to their full potential, that all they needed was to be out of oppression, and that they would know what to do with themselves, okay? That somehow in nature, all right, the noble savage idea, that he'd be pure, he'd be cleansed, mm-hmm. if he were bodily free, without any influence, without any force upon him. That's a romantic notion of freedom today. You think about it, it still exists today, certainly. We just set them free, they'll be fine. They'll be fine on their own. And again, these romantic notions have written our history to think about the Emancipation Proclamation as somehow a document of freedom, not a document of war.
Okay.
Abolitionists did not always perceive the harm done to the slave who is set free and is not prepared to be on his own. Now, there were slaves set free who were prepared to be on their own, but it's an individual thing. But when you do it wholesale, right, en masse, that's not true in every case. And you might be doing them harm. Do you understand? Set them to the wolves and make them liable, vulnerable to being abused in another way. Politically, perhaps. Economically, in another way. And once they were victims of cruel slave masters, now they are victims of northern do-gooders. Got it? They become a victim in another way if they're not understanding in their freedom. For sometimes, I call it impractical northern intellectualism. We still have some of that going on. Intellectualism today is what's carrying us. And by the way, this idea of self-realization, some are more self-realized than others. And so the more self-realized one must be the elite, okay? Because I haven't gotten there yet, all right? But they, since they got there first, right, they get to lead me because I'm not self-realized yet, okay? Notice what Booker T. Washington, he was a boy when Emancipation Proclamation was read, and they were, for some minutes, there was great rejoicing and thanksgiving and wild scenes of ecstasy, but there was no feeling of bitterness. In fact, there was pity among the slaves for our former owners. Because without the slaves, you know, the white man didn't know how to work. He didn't know how to do any manual labor. He was destitute without his slaves. Think about it. And that's why the slaves felt sorry for the white man. Who's going to iron his clothes? Who's going to wash his clothes? Who's going to raise his children? Who was going to plant and pick the cotton, right?
What did the white man do?
Go to school, drink tea. I don't know, have parties, high societies. What?
I mean, there were poor whites as well as poor blacks all throughout
the country. But on the plantations.
Large plantations were the exception rather than the rule.
But these slaves were on the plantation and they felt sorry for their white plantation owners that depended upon them so. See, the white man was just as dependent upon the black slave as vice versa. Think about it.
Just like any employer or employee, it's all it is.
It's not employer-employee either.
Sure. It's
not
the same relationship.
No, very different. Your employer can't take you out and whip you for not getting a report in on you.
No.
It feels like it sometimes.
No. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, you're saying, what were they doing? It would be like you're the management of a business enterprise.
I beg to differ.
You may not actually, it's like the
general. You've never built a railroad, I can tell.
I'm really saying the President General Motors
no,
doesn't
washing,
go down.
No washing, no ticking. No, I
can't. Doesn't go down.
Time out. Let's go on here. The wild rejoicing on the part of the emancipated colored people lasted but for a brief period. For I noticed that by the time they returned to their cabins, there was a change in their feelings. The great responsibility of being free, of having charge of themselves. And we still feel this way, white, black, or yellow, right?
Yep.
Having charge of ourselves,
absolutely.
We're talking about
yes,
that around
absolutely.
The table. Of having to think and plan for themselves and their children seemed to take possession of them. Now we realize that no slave could marry without the master's permission. And sometimes the masters chose their mates.
That's right.
You know, they bred them. And their children became owned by the slave. It was a dehumanized situation. But yet, what was going to happen now? I mean, the distance between where they were and where they were now was there was a chasm. There was a chasm, something, there was a hole somewhere. The bridge hadn't been made, hadn't been built for them to cross over. They were just thrust into it. Having to plan and think for themselves and their children seemed to take possession of them. This is why the education of our children today must be for their own self-government.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was very much like suddenly turning a youth of 10 or 12 years out into the world to provide for himself. In a few hours, the great questions with which the Anglo-Saxon race had been grappling for centuries had been thrown upon these people to be solved. These were the questions of a home, a living, the rearing of children, education, citizenship, and the establishment and support of churches. Was it any wonder that within a few hours the wild rejoicing ceased and a feeling of deep gloom seemed to pervade the slave quarters? To some it seemed that now that they were in actual possession of it, freedom was a more serious thing than they had expected to find it. Some of the slaves were 70 or 80 years old. Their best days were gone. They had no strength with which to earn a living in a strange place and among strange people, even if they had been sure where to find a new place of abode. To this class, the problem seemed especially hard. Besides, deep down in their hearts, there was a strange and peculiar attachment to old Master and old Mrs. and to their children, which they found it hard to think of breaking off. With these, they had spent, in some cases, nearly a half century, and it was no light thing to think of parting. Gradually, one by one, with their former own, stealthily at first, the older slaves began to wander from the slave quarters back to the big house to have a whispered conversation with their former owners as to the future. The institution was ended by the sufficient state's ratification. Now, this whole idea of slavery was forcibly done by law in the 13th Amendment, not by the emancipation, but by the 13th Amendment in after the war, during Reconstruction. Again, it was a forced thing by law. And this is when the South had been beaten. And it was, so it was not by true consent of the South, because in order for them to come back into the Union and join up again in Reconstruction, they had agreed to the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. Again, it was by force. What do you think began to breed in the South? It gave birth to Black Codes. It gave birth to the Ku Klux Klan. It gave birth to separate, but equal but separate, okay? Segregation. See, so did it resolve it? The 13th? No. It stopped slavery, but it bred resentment. This is why it's taken care of locally.
But the states that you mentioned that did it voluntarily, abolished slavery, did they have
the Black Codes? Some had it more severely than others. But you see, the Black man also had to prepare himself to bring himself to the level of his own self-government. There was that struggle. Let's look at the next
point. That's an interesting point, by the way, that you made earlier, that the Anglo-Saxon race had hundreds of years to establish that level.
To learn it, even.
And it was just thrust in a matter of hours on...
Okay. Overcoming, and this is the root of slavery, overcoming the hatred and prejudice in another individual against you. Now, this is what the slave had to encounter. Yes, he was set free, but he faced something worse, hatred and prejudice of another person against himself. Okay, is the struggle of our day, of the post-Civil War America, and it is a struggle which cannot be resolved politically, nor legally, neither by constitutional edict, nor by force of law. Nevertheless, Americans, in letting go of our original principles, we continue to attempt to use the powers of civil government to resolve hatred and prejudice, do we not?
Yes.
We try to do that. You know, you can't make someone love their fellow
right.
man.
Absolutely.
Love is a decision you make. Love is of the will. There's only one power, not legal power, there's only one power that can cause that to happen. And I'll go on further here. So the Emancipation Proclamation and the laws that flow from it, all these have not undone political and social injustices. They didn't undo anything. They just made it more difficult to undo. Do you make sense with that? So that's why we keep amending our Constitution with all these particulars on a national level, nationalizing all our problems. It's going to make it more difficult to resolve because it isn't taken into account consent of the governed. Or again, where these problems are really resolved. In issuing the proclamation, Lincoln went as far as he could legally. All right, but that as far as he could do legally. The rest is up to the human heart. It's the human heart that no law can change. Is it not true?
Mm-hmm.
Although it is not possible for most African Americans to eat at lunch counters in most parts of the United States, the extension of these civilities has been accompanied by subtle yet barbarous forms of discrimination. These forms extend from redlining and the sale of real estate to discrimination and employment to the maladministration of justice. The law itself is no longer an obstruction to justice and equality. It's not the law that's the problem. We can make all kinds of laws, wonderful written laws, but what's the problem? The people who live under the law. They don't have the spirit of the law. It's illegal. Again, it's force. So, what is the matter here? Without the existence of what we call our infrastructure, our political infrastructure, we would be denied our own personal struggle. You know, this Constitution allows us to have our own personal struggles with ourselves about these matters, about our views of another individual or another group of people. We struggle with self-evident truth that is so vitally necessary to the progress of individual liberty in this world. It's a personal struggle. Lincoln had to struggle about slavery within himself, but he couldn't struggle for somebody else, could he? He had to deal with his views of the black man within himself, but he could not impose his conclusions upon another man. That's just a fact, is it not? To have it really resolved, to have it concluded and ended in himself. And this Constitution permits the individual to come to truth on his own. And those who do have the truth, to demonstrate it voluntarily. Freedom is more than a condition of the body. It's of the soul first. The inner man, not the body. An individual's capacity for freedom is proportionate to the liberty, his internal freedom. That's what liberty is. This is how free are you inside of yourself. Now, what does that mean? You know, the white slave master was just as much a prisoner to slavery as the black man was. True? It's his ideas, his opinions. Mm-hmm. So, this is what liberty is. See if you get this. If I were to talk, what do you mean by inner freedom? It means that you have the power and ability to do what you judge to be good. Do you do what you judge to be good, or do you do the opposite of what you judge to be good? If you do what you opposite of what you judge to be good, you're hampered, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. You're what?
You're hampered. You're hobbled. And you don't do what you judge to be evil. Or do you do what you judge to be evil? You're your own worst enemy if you do that, right? Mm-hmm. You're really at liberty when you do what you know is good, and you don't do what you know is evil. That's liberty. It's just that simple. And your light of what is good or evil is relative to you. It's personal. Right? Mm-hmm. And I can't judge you for your own judgments. I can't measure you by what I know, nor can you judge me by what you know. Unless we know the same things. That's called liberty of conscience. So long as I don't injure you in your life, liberty, and property, I'm free in body, okay? I'm not put in jail. And so long as you allow me my safety of life, liberty, and property, personal property, you're not put in jail. That's what civil government is for, is to put anybody in jail or to punish them that threatens me or another individual in their life, liberty, and property. That's it. It is internal slavery not to do good when you judge things to be good, and to do what judges want to do, and to do those things you judge to be evil. That's slavery. That's, or to do what he hates under duress. Okay, when you're forced to do, something within you forces you to do against what is good. Booker T. Washington said this: in my early life, I used to cherish a feeling of ill will toward anyone who spoke in bitter terms against the Negro, or who advocated measures that tended to oppress the black man or take from him opportunities for growth in the most complete manner. Now, whenever I hear anyone advocating measures that are meant to curtail the development of another, I pity the individual who would do this. I know that the one who makes this mistake does so because of his own lack of opportunity for the highest kind of growth. I pity him because I know that he is trying to stop the progress of the world. And because I know that in time the development and the ceaseless advance of humanity will make him ashamed of this weak and narrow position. Mm-hmm. One might as well try to stop the progress of a mighty railroad train by throwing his body across the track as to try to stop the growth of the world in the direction of giving mankind more intelligence, more culture, more skill, more liberty, and the direction of extending more sympathy and more brotherly kindness. We have liberty grows. It's organic. From one generation to another, it increases. It's not decreasing. We have so much liberty to make mistakes today. We've made them all. Our nation is so free, we've made every stupid mistake possible. Have we not?
Yes.
We're free to make mistakes, and we're making them left, right, center, and right now as we speak. But that's freedom. And not only that, but the mistakes we make only affirm what is true. Doesn't hurt us. It teaches us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And yet we're still standing. Because we're still dependent upon our own ability to know the truth for ourselves. There's only one thing that will give us the ability to have liberty, and that's the knowing of truth. The power of truth working in our lives will set you free. The truth shall set you free. And it's divine truth. It has to be a divine power greater than human power. The only power greater than our own humanity is divine power. And truth is divine. It is not self-realization. It's revelation, divine revelation. Lincoln's vision of a nation truly fulfilling is its spiritual heritage. This is Governor Nelson Rockefeller. Can you imagine?
Wow.
God speaks through jackasses, but he still does, okay? Lincoln's vision of a nation truly fulfilling its spiritual heritage is not yet achieved. That is true. See, it's a spiritual. It is not political.
Yes.
It's spiritual because it's unseen work. It's in the unseen parts of man, which is the human heart and the human soul. And the only thing that can penetrate is divine truth. And our Declaration of Independence is it came from a divine revelation. It didn't come from Rousseau. It came from the scriptures. And that cannot be defeated and denied without crashing and burning. True? Yeah. It's like the law of gravity. So there's the Emancipation Proclamation.